We were talking about what team, you know, everybody will have to start deciding what team they're on, but it seems to me the decision is pretty much made for us. I mean, it's to me, it's simple. For example, that which lies directly in front of us right now, the war that we are about to have, what we experienced with 9/11, the people who want us dead, that's all it seems they want. They want us dead. I suppose in an ideal world, they would like us converted, but they probably decided we're not converting, so now they want us dead. And so what choice is there? I mean, it seems to me that we are on the path to war. We are going to have a war, and we are going to kill before we're killed, or we're going to kill in retaliation for what happened to us, but there's going to be this war, and I don't see how you can choose any other team. Gordon?
Well, there, you know, we've had people from this country who chose another team.
Oh, we have, yes, it's true.
And, you know, when things get tight and tough, like I said, you know, we enter this polarized world where we see the best and worst of us. And so, you know, it's if there's a shortage of food, there's going to be a problem. And so it's not necessarily that, you know, the bad guys are over there in the other side of the world. It's just that they're everywhere. You know, it's a case where society has kind of lost its spiritual fiber, and it's trying to get it back, and it's there's a lot of people working very hard to get it back, and I think that it will triumph eventually. You know, eventually we're going to see brighter days, much brighter, better than perhaps any time in our planet's history is coming. But not before we have this this shakeout.
Can anybody be possessed?
Theoretically, anybody could be possessed. A lot of people do it daily, and not in a negative way either. Possession we tend to think of as a you know unclean spirit that's possessing our body and, mm-hmm. and influencing us. Mm-hmm. And while that is one definition of it, there are other levels of possession which can be benevolent, but it is not for the faint at heart. It's not for the experimenters.
Give me an example.
Well, for example, in the 80s and 90s, channeling was very popular, and it was a repeat of the spiritualist movement of the turn of the century, the 20th century. And so that cycle came back again governed by astrological forces, and also people who were willing to experiment with communications. So that communications in deep meditative states, deep trance states, you open yourself up for somebody to come through and talk to you. Now, depending upon your individual training and your belief systems and your spiritual center, you would draw on, hopefully, benevolent forces. But if you're just experimenting, like with a Ouija board or something like that, and without the training, you don't know what you're going to get. It's kind of like dialing a phone number, and you don't know, you know, who you're going to get on the other line. So that's a case where it's possession by agreement, where you are seeking consciously a communications with some other entity. So that's an example right there.
When did this process of essentially mass possession begin? Do you know how long ago it began?
I think it started in the early 60s. It began as society began to experiment. We began to look and see things differently. We weren't willing to accept what came before us. We wanted to express ourselves in different ways as a society. So the society, at least in America, became a society of entrepreneurship, business at all costs, profit at all costs. And we then started to divide, where unions came in because they said we need to form a union to protect ourselves. We need to have rights. And so we began to divide up in the workplace. We began to divide up in society. We had the sexual revolution. We had the anti-war. So if we look back, we see, you know, Vietnam. We see that whole time period, and that's where the level of consciousness, at least the negativity part of consciousness, got a foothold. It's not that it wasn't there and always has not been. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. But it was enough mass, if you will, where it was able to awaken, if you will, a lot of the negative forces that were out there. And the negative forces then said, oh, I'm out of my sleep. There is now plenty of bodies which we can begin to look at. And so we had the drug movement. Everybody's experimenting. And if you read a lot of the transcripts of that time period of people who were tripping, you know, it reads like a fantasy sci-fi story. But if you really read it, you can see the things that they're talking about is clearly some other personality is involved that became part of that person.
And so those people are now our leaders.
It's always the way that the people who are now suits.
Yeah, they're now the suits. That's right. I don't know why I'm laughing. Do the people who are possessed now, many of them, to use Father Malachi Martin's phrase, perfectly possessed, are many of them aware of it? At some level, are they aware that it's not fully their consciousness and not fully their bidding that they're doing?
No. It's a rarity that people are aware of it. I mean, I perhaps have been involved in maybe 100 such cases of possession, and had a chance firsthand to actually experience a possession taking place. And
what have you seen?
I was. My wife and I were out in Arizona. We had some friends out there who found a house. So they asked me to come over and see their new house that they had purchased. And we went over to the house, and I walked into the house, and the woman turns to me, and she says, "Right." She says, "You just turned white as a ghost." She says, is there a ghost in this house? And I said, "I don't know." I said, "But there's a real strange feeling in here." And I said, if I didn't know better, I would say that the house is possessed. And I said, "I know you don't want to hear that." And she said, "Well, I was feeling something, but I didn't know what it was. This is really why I wanted you to come over." And I said, "Well, you know, have you closed on this house yet?" And she says, "No, we haven't closed on it." I said, "Well, why don't you give it some time?" I says, "And if your insights tell you to do it, do it. But why don't you give it some time?" Well, her future husband really wanted this house. I mean, he just wanted it. And he went ahead and bought it himself. Mm-hmm. And they moved in. And then about 3 months later, I get a call. And they said, would you come over? We're having a problem. So I went over. And once again, I walked in and, you know, turned white again, as she described it. And she says, "I know you're seeing something." I said, "Well, I'm just seeing blood all over this floor." And I said, "I don't know where it's coming from." And she says, "Well," she says, "the reason I wanted you to come over here when my husband is not here is because he's changed. He's totally changed." And and I said, "Well, you got to find out." I said, "Hopefully this blood doesn't mean something's going to happen." And I says, "I think you got to find out about this house first of all." And so we left, and I get a call the next day, and she researched it, and she found out that the woman that was in the house was having an affair with someone else, and the husband came home and killed her on the kitchen floor. And she bled to death right there on the floor where I was seeing it. And so I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And she says, "I want you to come over and talk to my husband, because I told him about this too." And she says, "His eyes are just different." She says, "And if you come, I know you'll see something." So I went over for dinner, and I looked at him, and truly, he was different. And so I looked at him, and I said, "Do you think you're the same person that you were 3 months ago?"
Right.
And he says, "Of course I am." And so I said, "Do I have your permission to just come over and touch you on the shoulder?" And I said, I wouldn't want to do anything without your permission, not even think about it. And he said, why? And I said, because I think you've kind of picked up something, maybe from this house. And he said, sure. He said, that's nothing wrong with me. So I went over and I touched him on the shoulder, and he literally was thrown back maybe 5 or 6 feet, just like electric shock. He went back. The lights in the house went off. He hit the floor. The exact same spot in the kitchen where the blood was.
Oh, wow.
She ran and got a flashlight, went to pick up the phone. The phone didn't work. Was going to call 911 because she thought he was badly injured. And lights came back on. You know, no circuit breakers, nothing. Lights just came back on. Uh-huh. And I went over and helped him up, and his eyes were back to normal. And he says, I think we should buy this house.
What?
And I said, what? I said, she says, oh, he must have hit his head. He says, no, I really think we should buy this house. And he was back 3 months ago.
Before he even made the decision?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And he did not for days believe any of it. He didn't believe any of the things that had transpired, where he had been, what he had done. It was just like a total block of that time period.
So it's like you knocked something out of him.
I don't know. I mean, I did not intentionally or consciously do anything.
I understand.
My insight was to go over and put my hand on his shoulder, and not knowing why to do that. But after you've been on this field for 20 years, you kind of follow those things.
Yeah.
And the only thing I could think about is that it just discharged the possessed entity that was there.
At that instant?
Did
you feel anything?
I felt... when I hit it, I felt the shock, but, you know, you and I both work electronics, so we're not unfamiliar to getting shocks.
That's right.
So I felt that shock, and I was thrown back, saw stars, you know, that kind of thing where you squeeze your eyes really closed, and even though the lights were out, I could see streams of light that seemed to be flowing into him versus something that's flowing out of him, and... I'm assuming that was other spiritual forces that were coming into the system. You know, once the negativity was out, it made room for, you know, malevolent forces to come in.
I'm curious, how did it then turn out? I mean, was that thing then gone from that locality?
It was gone. They remained in that house. I wish I could say it had a happy ending, but 3 years later, they divorced. And they divorced over money issues, and then they both went their separate ways. But as far as that time period and those issues were gone. Of what he just kept craving. One of the things that he did, he kept craving to eat raw meat. I mean, it would just cook it just barely, you know.
Yes.
But that was one of the things, and he wasn't a drinker at all, and he kept drinking gin. Just, you know, he'd buy a fifth of gin and drink it like nothing, like we drink water. And it didn't seem to have any effect on him, according to her. He would just drink and eat. He just loved to eat meat. He no longer wanted to have other things, you know, like vegetables or a mixture or fish. He just wanted meat.
Boy, is that odd.
Yeah.
Is that the only case of it? You said you had about 100. I mean...
Yeah, we had another case where we were invited to go to a wedding in the Gold Coast of Connecticut, out in the Greenwich area, and it was the reception was to be held at an inn, a 300-acre inn. The inn was a 200-year-old inn. It used to be a working farm at that time, and there were there actually were slaves that were on that property at that time. And we went into this reception and we were late, and they had it was in the winter, and they had a huge fireplace, probably 6 to 8 feet across, one of these big, massive fireplaces in the main entrance to this inn.
Mm-hmm.
And there probably were 150 people there, and around the fireplace there were maybe 20 people that were just sitting there talking and having a drink, and we met some friends and we started talking to them. And then all of a sudden, both Cynthia and myself started to get cold. And Cynthia says, boy, she says, you know, it must really be cold outside. She says, because I'm still shivering. And then I was feeling cold. I said, you know, I am too. I said, maybe we just get closer to this fire. And we moved closer, and we still were freezing. So finally, I'm sitting there, and I'm talking to some people, and I hear this voice as clear as, you know, I hear your voice, and it says, come into the library. And I turned to Cynthia thinking, you know, did she hear this voice too? And she looked at me, and she said, she says, I'm getting this feeling like we need to be someplace else in this house. And I said, well, I just heard a voice saying go to the library. So she goes over to one of the waitresses. She says, do you have a library in this house? And she says, no. She says, this is just an inn. And she says, okay. She came back, and she says, no, there's no library. And I said, well, I wouldn't have had that unless there really was something. So I went over and talked to another person in the reservation desk there, and I said, this house used to have a library. And he says, yeah, he says, we did. He says, we now use this as kind of as a wine cellar area. He says, it's not chilled, but we keep it in here. And I said, where is it? He says, it's down the hall to the left. He says, but it's not open to the public. And I said, okay, thank you. So I came back to Cynthia and I told her, I said, yeah, well, I guess there was a library. And then I hear the voice again, please come now. So I said, well, I'm going to have to, you know, do this, violate this a bit. So I went over to the waitress and I said, I know the library is off limits here. I said, but can I just take a peek in for a second? I said, she said, sure, go ahead. So that was good enough for me. And I walked down the hall and I opened it, and I could see all the different cases of wine that were there. And there in the back was this library. And I went over to the books. I said, isn't this strange? And now we were really cold. I mean, noticeably cold. And I hear this voice again, and it says, bottom shelf, third book, my diary. That's all it said. And so I told Cynthia, and Cynthia went over the shelf, went down the bottom, third book over. It took out this little tiny hardcover book that was dated, I think it was 1789, I think it was. And I'm not positive about the date, but close enough. She took it out and opened the book, and in the book is this poem in this really tiny handwriting. And so Cynthia read this poem, and the poem was written about this woman who lived in the house, describing the gardens and describing the fact that she loved one of the slaves that was there, and that she knew that her father would kill her if he ever found out. And then she goes on to say, I'm sure this will happen. And then the book, the journal ends. That was the last entry.
I'm sure this will happen, meaning, will be found out. I will be killed.
Yes. And then we, so that's the only information we had. So then we went back in. I got a hold of the owner of the inn, and he's running around like crazy, of course. And I said, I know you're really busy. I said, how do we find out about the history of this inn? He says, oh, he says, there's a book that's been written about this inn. He says, you can get it over there. It's for sale.
About 20 seconds.
I went over, got the book, opened the book up, broke the book to the binding, talked about the death of the girl by an unknown accident that occurred on the farm, never solved the accident of why she was dead, and her little spirit that's been back there. I asked the guy, I said, tell me, I said, have you had any conditions here with people? He said, look, I don't want to talk about ghosts. He says, I've had enough of that here. And he walked away.
Stand by. We'll be right back. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.